welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Friday, February 10th, 2017. With me today, John Martellaro. How are you, John?
I am good. Glad to be here.
Glad that you're here. Also glad that Brian Chaffin is here. That would be you, Brian.
Balderdash! Wait, is that one I'm supposed to...
He's starting early.
Well played. Is that one I'm supposed to shout that? I'm not.
We asked you to hold Neil Pan for 30 seconds, Brian.
Shout out to Neil Pan.
I haven't even said anything yet, and Brian's doing Balderdash.
Yeah, but he's also sharing love with Neil. And
Neil is a noted archetype. Yes, he's buying my cube.
Neil has a podcast, doesn't he?
He does. Arca Speak.
Oh, cool. All right, I'll throw a link in the show notes in case anyone's interested.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. Also, there'll be a link in the show notes for Blue Apron because they're a sponsor today, and we'll talk about them soon. And first, though, there is a report out that the iPhone 8 or the next iPhone is going to have an iris scanner built into it, and the iris scanner is going to be there to function much in the same way that the Touch ID sensor does. So instead of scanning your fingerprint to authenticate, it will scan the iris in your eye. And just in case anyone out there is not sure what the iris is, you know, when you look at your eye, you have the white part, then you have the colored ring. That colored ring is your iris. And then in the middle of the iris, you have the pupil, and that's the black part. So...
Right. So is this only in the fancy one?
Well, that's kind of unclear right now. So it may be just in the fancy one. It would kind of make
sense.
That
would explain the $1,000. Yeah. That would explain the price increase. Yeah. More so.
Is this iris scanner, Jeff, is this passive or active?
Well, that's kind of, not known right now either. So, my guess is, actually, I don't even have a guess. I don't know. We don't know. That's not information that has leaked out yet. Mm-hmm. But you know, the idea is everyone's iris is unique, like their fingerprints. So you can use the iris as a biometric data point to verify that someone is who they say they are. And of course, that's assuming that we don't get all creepy and pull people's eyeballs out. And then if you get an eye transplant, you're going to have to retrain your iPhone because your iris will be different.
Well, you know, I get an eye transplant every year just to keep them fresh. So, you know, it'll be particularly affecting me.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it would.
What if I say something like, I'll be back in a vaguely Austrian accent? Would that do anything?
I got a little hot in here. Yeah.
Yeah. So like if Apple can do this, it would certainly be a step forward, right? It would be, we've been talking about, better biometric authentication for a while. Iris scans have been the stuff of science fiction for decades. Using fingerprint, Apple was first to do fingerprints right. With Touch ID, and if Apple can do something here with iris scanning, especially if it's something that Apple controls, because like I mean, no one on the Android side has matched Touch ID yet.
No,
after years.
It's interesting you bring up the whole Touch ID fingerprint thing because Apple would not be first to market with an iris scanning phone.
Right, but they would be first to market to do it right if mm-hmm. they do it right.
Correct. Yeah.
If they do it right, which remains to be seen, but this is the Apple's track record on this is exemplary.
So I agree with you. And now, just for the sake of argument, I'm going to toss another idea out here. So the report about this iris scanner comes from supply sources talking with DigiTimes. Now, a lot of people have serious issues trusting anything from DigiTimes, but Brian, you've pointed out on more than one occasion that their track record is actually pretty good, and even if they misinterpret something, they still most of the time actually have the grain of truth. And
yeah, I think very, very strongly. I mean, like, DigiTimes has been more increasingly accurate for the last, I don't know, 4 years now. And people want to cling on to the stories before then, probably even longer than 4 years ago, really. People want to instead keep the frame of mind back when DigiTimes was actually frequently wrong. Mm-hmm. It's just no longer the case. And by and large, the basis of their leaks are usually right these days.
Yeah. So with that in mind, I'm going to toss out the idea that maybe they're misinterpreting the information they're getting.
How so?
What if instead of doing iris scanning, they're doing facial recognition scanning? And the reason that I bring that up is because Apple's investments into this part of the biometric space hasn't involved iris related technology, at least in a big way. What they have done, though, is they've bought three different facial recognition companies since 2010. And in 2011, they filed a patent application for using facial recognition as an authentication system for their devices.
Do we have any patents related to iris scanning? I can't remember any.
I haven't found any yet. Doesn't mean they're not there, but it does mean that I haven't found any yet.
I'm doing that. What do they use that? What's that thing called?
The Googles?
Yeah, the Googles. Googles.
Yeah, Google
iris,
has their
iris.
Yeah. Now.
I don't think so. Patently Apple, which has done a very, very, very good job of. Oh, that's just the first page, though.
Now,
not
with
finding
the
iris.
Go ahead. Apple does have that relates to iris while you're digging through the interwebs. Yep. Is a trademark for Iris Engine. And this is something that they trademarked a few years ago. At least a couple years ago. Well, no, actually, maybe not that long ago, because it surfaced at the same time as the AirPods and Touch Bar trademarks. So Iris Engine, there's a trademark, and that could indicate that they're doing iris technology, or that they just wanted to have the name locked down for at least a while. Now, Iris Engine does sound more sexy than Face Engine.
Yeah, you know, I just I think you're onto something here. I think facial recognition is a lot more doable at the level. At the level that that Apple would demand, than iris scanning.
But you know what I wonder about, Brian? I wonder about the variability of the human face, about whether you shaved or not, whether you have makeup on, if you're a woman or man.
Dude, this stuff is
Iris scan seems so mathematical and so predictable and so.
Oh man, faces
are uniquely elegant and complex, but static.
Balderdash.
Balderdash. I knew it didn't take long.
Facial recognition is utterly mathematical. I mean, we can do this but stuff. We can do this stuff with a crowd. And I say we, not no one here in this room, but we can do this stuff from, you know, like cameras on crowds these days. Let alone when you're actually holding the phone up to your face.
It's based from what I've seen euphemistically. It's based on key points. It's based on geometry, not texture.
So, John, we can make iris scanning a variable as well. Do you wear glasses?
Of course.
Lenses distort the shape of your eye for those that are looking in.
Of course. You have to take your glasses off.
There's the progressives.
So, yeah, and if you're wearing progressives, it's even more so of an issue.
Curvature. Yeah.
So do you expect, and I'm using you in a broad sense, not you specifically, John, but do you expect people to take off their glasses every time they need to authenticate their iPhone?
Oh, no.
Yeah, but you can leave your glasses on if you're doing facial recognition.
It doesn't change the geometry of your cheekbones and your nose and your chin. Yeah. I wonder what the spoofability factor is, though.
It probably depends on how sophisticated they want to get with their comparison points.
Could you hold a photograph up to the phone of somebody else?
My guess is that they would be more sophisticated than that.
Yeah.
By the way, we have iris scanning rumors going back to 2014 that I'm finding. Mm-hmm. Mac Rumors did something in 2014. Apple Insider had something back in August of this year. Here we go. I finally found a patent. Apple patents the iris scanning technology for use on iPhone 7S. This would be... What's the date on this one? You know, publications that don't put a date on their articles. Okay. All right. They have one. All right. I can get off my horse, but don't wait. What the heck is that about?
I've seen those.
Anyway, this,
you have to hunt.
This is July, 2016. Looks like Apple has, oh, this is great. This is just a fantastic article because only the title actually mentions the patent.
That's
really
sweet.
Well written. Yeah. So anyway, supposedly Apple has something. Why is no one else talking about this? I call balderdash on this too.
Yeah. Is there even a patent number in the article?
No. Well, nothing. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, whatever.
What if you did both? What if you did the geometric points of facial recognition combined with an iris scan together? Then you'd have a virtually unbeatable system.
That, yeah. And then the question I have is, how convenient will it be for users? How much of a performance hit will your device take? And what's this going to do to the battery life?
Oh, I don't think it'd be much of a factor. We get tremendous computational power in the A10 and then the A11 coming. I think it's up to the task.
Yeah. Remember
when Phil Schiller talked about the 100 billion operations that's done on every photograph you take in 100 milliseconds?
Yeah, which, by the way, where they do facial recognition. Just saying.
Yeah, where they're already doing facial recognition.
Inconvenient truth, John.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Brian. Okay.
No, it's not.
No, actually, it is a good point. Apple is already Apple already has several years of facial recognition experience
because of
photos. Okay.
Yeah, I thought you meant me being obnoxious to John. That was
not. Oh, no, no, no. That's just a given.
That was a bad point.
Yeah. So, anyhow, I know Apple can do anything they want, given enough time and money, but I'm leaning towards facial recognition over iris recognition.
All right. You know what Apple can't do, no matter how much time nor money it has?
Are you really trying to segue for me?
Fetus, perhaps?
No.
Okay, good.
Hold your index finger up. Grab your index finger with your other hand.
Are we about to go to junior high school?
Yes, absolutely. no, time, neither time nor money. We'll let Apple grab its own finger.
Yeah, well, at least not yet.
I had someone in junior high actually when I stipulated that anything's possible. I had someone in junior high throw that in my face.
Yeah, man, talk about a serious burn.
Yeah, serious.
Yeah. All right.
Anyway, please go ahead.
Yeah. All right. Well, on that exciting note, I'm just going to wrap up the topic and we're moving on. Okay. So that means we have a sponsor today, and that sponsor is Blue Apron. And I'm pretty pleased that Blue Apron has been sponsoring us because this means fewer people are going hungry. And not only are fewer people going hungry that are listening to the show, it means that you're eating stuff you hadn't thought to try before, which is pretty cool. So what Blue Apron does is come up with these really cool meal ideas, and then they go and find the freshest ingredients they can, the highest quality, sustainably sourced ingredients. And then they measure everything out, package it up, and ship it to you so you can make dinner. You don't have to go to the grocery store. You don't have to sit down and try and figure out what new thing you want to try because they've done it for you already. And it's easy to sign up. You just go to their webpage and make your account, and then you pick the meals you want from for the week, and they get delivered to you just like that. And they have suggestions for you already. So if you just want to trust that they're going to send you something that's good, which they are, you can just say okay and let the food show up and enjoy making your really good meals. So these meals cost like $10 ish or less per person, and you get to cook with people, and which is actually a really cool thing. You know, it's I think cooking with other people is a really great social and bonding experience. So I love that they're kind of helping promote that too, and I just love that they've come up with all these great recipes. So as an example, one of the recipes that they have in their upcoming meals is udon noodle soup with miso and soft-boiled eggs. So I can actually make udon noodle soup, which I haven't done. What I've always done is gone to the store and picked up one of the prepackaged things, bring it home and make it, or go to a restaurant. And I like the idea of getting to make it myself and learning how to do that and having another cool recipe that I can go to whenever I want to make something fun for myself or my friends or those special people in my life. So what you guys can do is get a discount on all of this. Head over to the Blue Apron website, and that's blueapron.com/TDO, blueapron.com/TDO. And when you go to that special URL, you're going to get the first three meals from your order for free, and you also get your shipping for free. So you get to save a little money while you try this out and figure out if I'm right, which, spoiler, I am. Their food tastes good. blueapron.com/TDO. Get your first three meals for free and get free shipping. And thank you, Blue Apron, for being our sponsor. All right, John. I'm calling on your expertise because we need to talk a little bit about smart TVs. And we've talked about smart TVs in the past, and we've talked about how Vizio got a slap on the wrist for literally spying on their customers through their smart TVs.
Right, this was Brian's article on February 6th.
Mm-hmm. So now you've been doing a little bit of research, and you have some suggestions for how we might be able to help protect ourselves from smart TVs spying on us.
Right. After I read Brian's article, I did a little bit of research, and it turns out that while not many reviews go into many details, there are specialty articles that talk about how to set up your TV and how to be alert about the options that are presented to you while you're setting up your TV and how to look for the privacy settings. Basically, what you need to do is when you research your 4K TV and you've figured out what model you want and so on, is start looking into reviews and discussions about that particular product and try to dig into the details of the privacy settings. So do your homework and read up, look in the manual. Be careful when you walk through the setup. And I found a nice article at The Verge that was published February 7th, the day afterwards, called Most Smart TVs Are Tracking You, Vizio Just Got Caught. And there's a nice section in there that talks about turning off smart TV tracking. And it discusses the different brands, and it's very illuminating. It talks about how Samsung has an opt-in service called Sync Plus that may be turned on when a TV was set up, and you need to go looking for it in the terms and policy section to decide whether you're going to reveal that viewing information. LG used to have this service called Live Plus, which may have gotten enabled when you set up your TV, and you have to go to settings, smart TV settings, and then disable something called Live Plus. So the key is to be aware of certain technology, because these systems that will monitor your viewing often have cutesy names that sound like they're helping or doing something cool, when actually it's just a kind of a label and a cute name for something that's actually monitoring your viewing habits. And Wirecutter went into this a while back, and the Verge article, which we'll put into the show notes, references the Wirecutter article, which is a little bit older, but goes into some details about Sony and the privacy settings and so on. So the short of this is, be aware of how the TV operates, study the manual, read up on the privacy settings, look at articles on the internet that talk about this, like this article at The Verge. Be very careful when you're setting up your TV that you don't rush through the setup process. Be very attuned to any kind of thing that that suggests that you're opting in. And then finally, try to figure out whether you can leave your TV disconnected from the Wi-Fi and it will still operate. My sense right now, and I could be wrong, but my sense right now is that most of these smart TVs, after the setup is done, will operate without being connected to the internet, with a loss of some secondary features like being able to run apps and do other things like check for updates. But you'll still be able to drive the TV with however you're driving it, through coax if it has it. Most of them don't have tuners anymore. Or driving it with HDMI, you should be okay. So those are some of the general ideas that I've learned about in the last week about how to deal with smart TVs that may offer you the opportunity to be monitored in what you view.
Good stuff.
Yeah, that's really good stuff. And I know when the day comes that my wonderful not smart TV finally dies, odds are I'm going to be stuck having to buy a smart TV. So one of the first things that I'm going to research when I pick out whatever my next TV will be is whether or not I'm required to have a network connection to actually get the TV working straight out of the box. And if the answer is yes, then I'm not going to buy the television, because I have no intention of ever having my TV connected to the network. I don't care about the other features. I need the screen. I have other devices to put stuff on that screen.
One of the things the Verge article talks about is that this slap on the wrist by the FTC against Vizio could have two different effects. One, it could brace the other manufacturers to be more careful about exposing these options to the customer, or it could drive them into even more devious means to avoid both criticism and detection. So you have to be careful. The FTC decision against Vizio doesn't solve everything.
What are two things that are not mutually exclusive? I'll take things people say for $1,000, Alex. Right? I mean, it will absolutely push TV manufacturers to be more devious. But that doesn't mean at the same time that we can't actually defeat some of these things at the same time. There's always going to be some give and take here, unfortunately. And by the way, I can't call Balderdash on everything you said because it's freaking awesome.
Yeah. Well, it's okay, Brian. You were able to get a Balderdash in earlier.
A preemptive Balderdash for the future. Yeah.
So, you know, there's that.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Brian.
Absolutely, man. Good information, too, because this stuff is important to me, at least.
I agree. It's important. And I like the idea of doing what we can to proactively preserve our privacy. All right. On that fun note, we're out of time. John, thank you so much for being here today.
It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And Brian, thank you for being here as well.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us. It's been a good week. And thanks to Blue Apron and all of our listeners, too, for making this podcast what it is. And you've done such a good job, Jeff.
Oh, thank you. And that URL, listeners, so that you can get your three free meals on your first order, blueapron.com/TDO. And yes, thank you, Blue Apron, for having our back this week. You rock. Listeners, you rock, too. We'll see you again on Monday.